Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You've got 670 The Score. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Matt Spiegel. It is Inside the Clubhouse. Another hour of us. And it's a good thing because Kyle Hendricks will join us in about 20 minutes. The Cubs starting pitcher, who signed a deal yesterday, one of several, to avoid arbitration. And then Jeff Idelson will join us later on in the hour, the president of the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. While Theo Epstein's been here, Bruce, he has gone to arbitration with one player. It was Justin Grimm.
That was odd in itself, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was the year that Justin Grimm ended up being released in spring training. When he was in Boston, he never went to arbitration with a single player. He has avoided doing that and the ugliness that can come with arbitration meetings and did so again this week.
I always hate the James Russell, Justin Grimm stories because they are the guys that managers go to on a daily basis when they know they have rubber arms and the mentality of, put me in there in any situation, anytime. And their careers are forever altered because they were good pitchers who pitched too often too many years in a row. And such is the case of Grimm. Such was the case of Russell pitching for those teams that were losing 90 game plus almost 100 games 1 year for the Cubs and blowing out. You know, basically blowing out because of overuse and because of the fact that managers knew they could count on the guy for never saying no.
Look for a bounce back from Justin Grimm, by the way, this year, because he discovered something in the minors last year, and then it manifested again.
I hope it's a new shoulder.
Well, you know what it is? He's added the slider back in, and he's getting ahead. It worked in a small sample in the minors and in Seattle at the end of last year, and now he's a Cleveland Indian. So you might see a bounce back from Justin Grimm, but that's not why we call.
Yeah, no, but again, there's always that pitcher on certain teams that gets used, abused, and the career just doesn't turn out the way it should have.
Mm-hmm. So they avoid arbitration with all those folks. And the big one that gets a lot of notice is Addison Russell. And let's face it, keeping Addison Russell at all is unseemly, is largely unpopular. And it's gonna anger a lot of people, regardless of the accuracy of the news. They've decided to keep this asset, Addison Russell, and they have gone about it in a very transparent way.
You think they should have released him?
I do. Yeah, I do. But I think the realities of what their financial situation is and what their actual stockpile is of assets and good young players and such was so much that they decided they could not simply give away the asset for nothing.
Right.
So they then decided to do it the way they've done it. And if you're going to do it, then you try to maximize every angle of it as best you can, including with trying to work with him to better his life.
Well, there's a plan in place with Major League Baseball, of course.
Right.
This is not the Cubs' plan. This is the plan of Major League Baseball that he's adhering to as far as the rehabilitation and the suspension. So the Cubs are not the team that suspended Addison Russell. It was Major League Baseball.
Right.
So that clarification is important.
Agreed. But the way they came out publicly and said, we want to be part of the solution, et cetera.
Right. Now,
the way they're
as to whether they keep him or not, that's up to them, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what the contract is about is he's going to make $3.4 million, but he's going to miss 28 days of pay at the beginning of that, so that'll be docked off of there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He made 3.2 last year. Normally, under normal situations, if he hadn't had the off-field problem and the fact that he had a down year, he would be coming in at around 4.8 would be his arbitration number.
That would be what he is asking for.
That would be close to what, in between what the Cubs and he would the Cubs would probably come in at about 4.3 to 4.4. They would come in at around 4.8. So it would be around 4-5 that the settlement would be.
Okay, so, in a normal situation.
So automatically, his situation has cost him a lot of money, number one. Number two, if he makes all his incentives, he can make another $550,000. So if he's on the team all year consecutively without a hiccup, he can make himself another $500,000. Okay, mm-hmm. Bring him roughly up to, you know,
just 3.4.
No, because he's going to be docked the first 28 days on his You know, he's going to lose $550,000.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be docked, right? So he can get that back and keep him pretty much even by that point, okay, of what he's going to earn this year.
But it's still less than what he would have gotten.
So to say that the Cubs are rewarding him for being his bad behavior and what he's being suspended for is just not accurate.
It doesn't seem to be, but it's being painted as that.
It's being portrayed that way, but it's not accurate.
Here, now, in Gordon Wittenmeyer's column in the Sun Times today, Russell's $3.4 million contract includes a series of roster bonuses that can add as much as $600,000, the same amount he will lose when he serves the final 29 games of a 40-game suspension. Now, that's just taking the math and assigning it to these two things that are comparable, but it's ignoring the fact that he's getting less than he would have gotten.
Without a doubt, a $200,000 raise in arbitration for a second-year player in arbitration is unheard of. It just doesn't happen, okay, no matter how bad you are.
So they signed him for much less than even the deals that they signed with other people avoiding arbitration. Those guys got way more.
So the perception that he's being rewarded is not accurate. Now, the Cubs are on they're on their word that if he doesn't do all the work in the offseason, if he doesn't come out of this in some forms rehabilitated to the point where it's acceptable to everybody as far as his work and his the way he talks about this situation, they can 1/6 him in early March and release him for 1/6 of his contract.
So they can take a look at him between now and then when they see him in early March and or late February, they can say, all right, is he actually paying attention to this? Is he really trying? Can we afford to keep going with this? Or is this just going to blow up in our face? And they can decide to bail on the situation.
Absolutely. So, you know, again, are they protecting an asset that they're hoping to build up to help them win or to possibly move somewhere else? There's no question about that business part of it. But they are adhering to the responsibility of saying, if the man doesn't do the work off the field, he's not going to be a Chicago Cub.
Look, I think he should have just been released and he should just move on.
Okay, but
they're not doing that.
I know, but you have no direct interest in the...
Correct.
Other than being a fan.
Which is
good enough.
It's not even from the fan's perspective, although, I mean, obviously there's a lot of fans that feel that way, but it's just like, is it worth it to keep him? And apparently it is. So once you've made that decision that you're going to keep him, then you do everything within your power to incentivize him to be a good human and a good ball player. So these incentives make all the sense in the world because you want him to play well and be present so he either A, helps you win, or B, returns his trade value to something useful.
You also don't want to be hypocritical. Excuse me, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Want to be hypocritical in terms
hypocritical of... Hypocritical as far as, you know, you did bring Aroldis Chapman in to help you win a championship who had a... short history and a suspension for abuse. Okay. So when people have done their work and they've been able to go on with their careers, you don't want to be hypocritical saying, we're not even going to allow that for one of our own. Okay. We brought in somebody from the outside that had gone through the rehabilitation, accepted back, helped us win a World Series without question. You can make a great case that they don't win without him.
That home run in Dodger Stadium in Game 5 turned the whole series around.
Right, but I mean, without a doubt, he was. What did he save? 20 of 22 games going down the end, he was dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to be hypocritical about bringing in someone from the outside that had a problem and that did the due diligence and you won't allow that for one of your own.
This is Chris in Barrington quickly here on 670 The Score. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys, I just want to say with the Russell thing, I don't understand the rewarding somebody like, hey, you know, if you can be good the whole year, we're going to give you that money back. You know, you did the crime. You shouldn't be rewarded. You know what? You lose that money. That's you got to pay the price. You know,
but,
I don't understand that.
But I don't agree that it's giving him that money back. I think that's the context you're accepting and choosing to see it as. Because but he's signed a deal that is for far less than what he should have gotten by the basics of the market.
True, but he also has a lot of baggage, and look what happened when he did.
But, I mean, can you look at it from this perspective? I know you can't get around it, and you think he should be released, but do you look at it from a baseball perspective that if he's on the roster all year, that means that he's helping you with what he's doing on the field?
I mean, I understand that. I think
you don't want him there, period, right?
No, it's not that I don't. Everyone should have a second chance, but there's been more stuff that's come out with the second lady, supposedly, and like
it's
there's
ugly.
Just so much going on that we don't know about. You know, it's just kind of hard to swallow.
It's very ugly, Chris, and I completely understand. The thing is, like, you need him to go along with the plan as designed by Major League Baseball and as supported by the Cubs.
I think he has.
Well, and the incentives are a way of saying, look, you better keep going along right with the plan as the season goes on, or else you're not going to play, and then you won't make your incentives as well.
I personally don't support anybody that abuses anybody out there. But I think that if there is rules in place for these things with a players association with Major League Baseball, and he's adhering to the rehabilitation, someone's going to give him a chance. If it's not the Cubs, it'll be someone else. Whether you think he's burned his bridge here and people of Chicago are fed up with him or not, you know, that's something to be debated on shows just like ours.
This is an ugly, ugly business when you've got to make decisions like that. And that's the one they've made. It's 670 The Score. It's Matt Spiegel and Bruce Levine doing Inside the Clubhouse. We'll come back and talk to Kyle Hendricks right here on The Score.
The pitch to Kingery, swing and a miss, strike three. Kyle Hendricks works 1-2-3.
Boy, we've heard that a lot over the past 4 years, haven't we?
Been a tremendous career so far. Great fun to watch. Maybe the guy I enjoy watching the most because the way he does it, the way he thinks about it, it's fun to dissect.
And because he's on the phone.
Well, I did figure that he would hear that. That's exactly right.
This is Inside the Clubhouse. He's Matt. I'm Bruce. We're here for you from 9 to 11 every Saturday, and we are pleased to bring in one of the top pitchers in the National League and certainly the Chicago Cubs. Kyle Hendricks joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Kyle, Happy New Year, and thanks for joining Matt and me today.
Hey, guys. Yeah, Happy New Year. No problem. Great to be on. You guys could just keep talking if you want. Like that. I heard that. So, yeah, we can just roll with that if you want.
You like that. Hey, you avoid arbitration yesterday, Kyle, and you get a lot of money for a conservative guy like you and your family to have made the money in first-year arbitration last year and now $7 million this year. How does that perspective of a conservative person and a conservative lifestyle change when you get this type of windfall money that changes not only your career but your family's future as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think I said it last year. Like you said, getting the money in first-year ARB and now to go through the process again and get this, it's really life-changing. And to be able to make that kind of money to play a game, to play baseball, it's what I love to do. And so you grow up just watching the game and loving the game, and, you know, that's really my focus. But, of course, to be able to just take care of your family and everything like that, it can make a lot of things easier, for sure.
See, I'm picturing you like Scrooge McDuck taking a treasure bath, just a bathtub full of $100 bills now.
Yeah, I'm not really a spender, you know, so I guess that might be what I have to do. That's a good idea, because I don't really know what I'm going to blow it on.
Well, seriously, is there a car that you've dreamed of? That this could be a moment to do that kind of thing.
You know, not necessarily. You're so caught up in the moment. And like I said, I'm so focused on baseball and playing the game that, you know, I know it's going to be there. So maybe years down the road, you know, I'm a saver and maybe I'll get there one day. Hmm. But for right now, honestly, you know, baseball is my focus. And so however long baseball is around, that's going to be my love and what I'm passionate about and what I'm doing.
You'll have your third pitching coach in 3 years, Tommy Hotovy, somebody that you know very well and have a great relationship with. Talk about that relationship moving forward and the perception of of a new guy being there who's not necessarily a new guy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Tommy's awesome. He's been around. He's been in the org, obviously, and been around the big league crew for a few years now. And so we all know him. And he's an awesome guy, what he brings to the field every day. It's always positive, and you can feel that he's really just there for you. He's on your team. And I think he's that way with every single pitcher. He doesn't treat anybody differently. But he's a hard worker, man. He gets in there, he puts in the hours, and he's willing to look for anything to find answers, really. You know, if you're struggling or if things are going good, no matter what, he's on your team and he's just trying to make you better. He's really good with game planning stuff, pitch sequencing, but he's also good at breaking down video and looking at mechanical stuff. So I think it's going to be huge for us going forward this year. And just having someone that we know has been around and that we can trust and has been part of the team, you know.
You know, it's an interesting bunch of moves that have been made to the coaching staff in terms of Anthony Iaposi coming back and Tommy Hottovy. And, you know, you just talked about the positivity and the trust. And it seemed the way that Theo Epstein has talked about this, that mix of personalities is very important to Theo and to you guys. And it seems like some of these changes are perhaps going to set you guys up for a more comfortable year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair to say. It's comfortability and having guys that we know, guys that have been around, we know what to expect. And they're all positive, hardworking guys that just want the best for the group. So, you know, it's always good to go out and get new people. You always have to be trying to get better. But sometimes the best answers can be sitting right in front of you, you know. And we have so many good people in this organization, so many bright minds that I think it's a good pool to pick from. And so bringing some guys back that we've had and giving opportunities to a guy like Tommy, I think that it's awesome to see for us going forward this year.
Kyle Hendricks, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. Kyle, when you look at your offseason, you know, I watched you train a little bit in Chicago last year. You were a member of the East Bank Club, and I used to see you working hard all season long. I know you're out west working as well, but what are your goals in the offseason physically and mentally to get yourself trained for that next season and to be even better if you can be?
Yeah, you're always trying to improve, you know. So, I mean, at first you're trying to get your rest, but once the rest period's over, then you're focused on where your improvements can come from. And every year you're always learning more about yourself, more about your body, how your body feels and how it moves. And so when I first start getting back into working out, you're just trying to build strength and see where your body's at, see if you have any, not injuries, you know, but if anything is feeling a little deficient, things where you can build again. So after you start there and getting into the throwing program, that's where the real focus comes, on the field. So when you start throwing, for me, it's just trying to get the feel of all my pitches as soon as I can. Build arm strength, of course, just to be healthy and be able to carry those innings and go deep in games. But really, I'm such a feel guy. I just, you know, every day I come out playing catch, you're just trying to hone your pitches as good as you can. So obviously two seam and change up, those are my bread and butter, but I was able to use my curveball a lot more last year, and it became more of a weapon for me. So I think that's still the next step, is just making that a better pitch, learning how and when to use it to get more outs with it, or to set up my other pitches better. So you learn so much about yourself every single year that you really just try and incorporate those things as you move forward.
Is yoga still a part of your life and routine, Kyle, in terms of finding mental balance and flexibility and that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yoga, when I first started really diving into it a few years ago, I knew that was going to stick. You know, that's a part of my routine that'll never go away. It's just something, you know, it depends. The volume of how much I do may change, but it's always going to be a part of it. And just for, obviously, the flexibility factor and just being able to move, but what it does for me mentally, like you said, just working on the breathing and being able to coordinate movements with breath. I mean, that's what you're doing when you're pitching. You have to be able to be calm, be able to breathe slowly and produce, you know, this motion and deliver the ball to the home plate. So it's a huge tool for me, for sure, that I'll definitely be using for my whole career.
Kyle, this weekend you'll be at the Cub convention along with a lot of your teammates, and for the first time, all of you will have to be asked in about your support and your perception of what's going on with Addison Russell. And his rehabilitation to come back and be the person and player that he wants to be representing you guys and the Cubs. How difficult is that question in general? And is there a collective way that you guys can go about this in a constructive way where it works for everybody when asked about it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're all on the same page with it. We're all on board. We love Addison. We love Melissa too. Everything that happened is unfortunate, you know, but we're just behind him. He's our teammate, and we're backing him. We just want him to be the best person he can be. And so whatever that process is going to take, we're focused on the field and what we have to take care of business-wise, but obviously just who he is as a person and the developments he's going to make. We're just here for him. Anything he needs, anything really anyone needs in this situation. We're just trying to be as supportive as we can.
There's a big mental skills department and all sorts of other therapeutic tools that are available for you guys, right, Kyle? It seems like there's an investment that needs to take place for the club in Addison and for Addison in the club with those resources.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's where Theo steps in. He's always looking for something. Anything that can help. And, you know, we've had a lot of meetings that we have in spring training, you know, that are new, that didn't happen years ago, like domestic violence meetings, things like this. We bring people into the complex to talk to the group, just education, you know, in general. So, yeah, from Theo and the front office's side, they're doing everything they can. And I know Addison is on board, and he wants to just become the best person he can be. So for sure, it's just both sides balancing it out and seeing what the best outcome is going to be.
Speaking of the mental edge department, after Ken Revizza passed away last spring, there seemed to be a little lack of where to go. I know the other guys have done a great job in that department there, but Kenny was kind of the go-to guy for an awful lot of people. How do you think that impacted the team as far as the end of the year in particular, and how much are you looking for Bob Tewksbury running that department going forward?
Yeah, I think it was a definite impact. You know, it was such a sudden loss, unexpected. And, you know, Kenny, he was the matriarch of the whole thing, really. He ran the system. So while he brought in so many good people around him, it was really tough just to see, you know, that head figure not around anymore day in and day out. So, yeah, luckily he passed so much down to his disciples that the people that we do have still around, they're now picking it up, his work, you know, in a way. But to bring in Bob Tewksbury, I actually got to meet him about a week or 10 days ago, and, you know, got to go out to lunch and just sit down and talk, and he is an awesome guy. And you can just tell the mental approach he has is so in line with what Ken was doing, with, you know, what everybody else that we have here already. So to just have someone kind of at the top that everybody can look to, you know where to go, you know, signified the same ideas, you know, being passed around between everyone. That's really what we needed, and so I think Tewks is going to be awesome for us. He's just, like I said, an awesome guy, nicest guy you could ever meet. So I'm really excited to get to work with him.
Kyle, how valuable is that 20 to 30-second manager, somebody that comes up with something succinct and positive for you to concentrate on that particular day? Something that Kenny was so good at, something that the other people in this business of the mental edge department are very in tune with.
Yeah, it's huge. It's one of the biggest parts of what we do. You know, you have to simplify as much as possible. Things can get so complex. You know, you can be running around. Things can really speed up on you real quick, on the field, off the field, no matter what you have going on. So to have someone around that can always bring it back to, like you said, just one succinct phrase, sentence, something like that. Just being able to simplify was the biggest lesson I think I learned from him and most other guys. But yeah, so for Bob now to kind of take that over, I'm excited just to see what he has for us.
On your recommendation, I bought the Mental ABCs of Pitching by Harvey Dorfman a couple years ago. It's still sitting by the bed. I haven't really dug into it. But Tewksbury wrote a book, 90% Mental, that a lot of people have talked about. Have you read that? Are you familiar with his work?
So he gave it to me when we went to lunch, and I'm in the process. I'll be reading it, and I'll be giving the book report back.
Did you get a good price? Did he give you a good price?
Yeah. You know, he just passed it right over. He said, lunch is on you.
You know what's funny is that I've thought of and mentioned Bob Tewksbury on the air in regards to you, pitching-wise? Because Tewksbury's a guy who threw like 85, maybe 86, and was successful for a long time.
Taking Kyle's number way down
Right, exactly.
That's okay. If I can pitch 85, 86 and get outs, I'll take it.
But that's the thing.
We actually joked about that and talked about that over lunch, just the pitching styles and, yeah, how similar the two of us really were. And when we started breaking down just mentally kind of what you think on the mound, we have a lot of similarities. So that's where I'm most excited is, you know, just to bounce ideas off of him and what he used to do. And there's so much experience there that there's going to be a lot to learn for sure.
Before we let you go, the offseason, Descalso was added. He's a great pro, and I'm sure he's going to add a lot to the team. But when you look at the free agent rumors and the Harper stuff, Cubs in and out, having to be stealth because of contract salary constraints possibly. How do you look at the Cubs off season so far, and how much interest do you pay to what's going on out there with the big boys?
Yeah, you know, you're always hearing it. There's no way to get around hearing the news and what's going on. But at the end of the day, we're not worried about anything with our club until something happens. So like you said, when we signed Descalso, that was exciting for us. He's really good friends with John Jay, who's just one of the best teammates I've ever gotten to play with. So I would assume I've heard the same things about Descalso. I'm really excited to get to meet him and play with him this year. But again, you can't really speculate too much. And once a deal is or a move is made or a deal is made, then we worry about it, you know, as a part of our group. But I think we have so many good players. I think all the answers are internal with us. You know, we dealt with a lot of injuries last year. We had, you know, some adversity we had to go through, and we still were right there. Obviously, we didn't make the run we wanted to, but we had the chance, and we were right there. We won 95 games. But our focus is always on the postseason and getting better. So I think this group that we have is really hungry, and no matter what additions or, you know, if we happen to not get anything, I think we'll be hungry and ready to go this year.
Well, there it is. Got a lot of antsy Cubs fans about the inactivity, but you just said you guys think you can get better and do it with what you have there in the clubhouse.
100%. We always believe in our guys. We're such a close-knit group, great friends, you know, and competitors. We just love to win. So I think there's a little bit of a bad taste, and guys have been really working hard this offseason. So I'm excited to, you know, see the guys at the Cub convention and have some fun there. But then I'm just really excited for camp to get going.
And the fans are looking forward to seeing you, too. I'll be there with my usual hand buzzer and squirting flour and all the fun things that happen
the whoopee cushion is
big, too. Kyle, thanks for taking some time out for Matt and I today on Inside the Clubhouse. Look forward to seeing you next weekend at the Cub convention.
Of course, guys. Thanks for having me. I'll see you next weekend.
Take care. Kyle Hendricks, always straightforward, always interesting, kind of like how he pitches is the way he comports himself, comes straight at you.
Love that he and Tewksbury talked about their styles. It's always been a comp I've thrown out there, and now here he is, their mental skills boss.
We have to take a quick break and come back with Jeff Idelson, the president of the Hall of Fame, talk about Lee Smith, Harold Baines, and some of the new guys that will be elected on January 22nd.
It is 670 The Score. It's Inside the Clubhouse. Welcome back in on Inside the Clubhouse. Here on 670 The Score, Steve Rosenblum at the top of the hour with me, Matt Spiegel, but a few more minutes with me and Bruce Levine on Inside the Clubhouse.
We are pleased to bring in the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, a good friend for many, many years, and still a young guy, believe it or not. He is, at least. I'm not. Jeff Idelson, nice enough to take some time out to join us on Inside the Clubhouse today. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
As my friend Satchel Paige used to say, not actually my friend, but as Satchel Paige used to say, age is mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. I'm doing great, Bruce. Happy New Year to Matt and you.
Yeah, thank you, same Jeff. To you. We have two automatic former Chicago star players going into the Hall of Fame. Veterans Committee voted in Harold Baines and Lee Smith to join you for the induction in late July in Cooperstown. A lot of people are happy here. A lot of controversy about Harold and him getting in because of the fact that people think that there was some favoritism along the way. Can you fill us in on how those committees for the veterans are comprised and who picks out the people to pick out the people?
Right. Well, You know, first of all, both guys, in my opinion, very deserving of election. We're really looking forward to welcoming them next July in Cooperstown. But the era committees are put together by our board of directors. They're done blindly. They're not done with the ballot in mind. You just try to create the best balance you can in the committee of 16. And, you know, you take a guy like Harold Baines, who, let's not forget the fact that he had almost 2,800 hits.
Right.
But this is a guy that played for a bunch of teams. So obviously he's got some people in the room that saw him play, players, executives, media members. But I think that the integrity of that committee was terrific. Everybody on that ballot got a fair review, and at the end of the day, you had Harold Baines and Lee Smith elected.
I'm one of those guys who feels kind of bad for Harold, because a lot of the conversations have gone from, boy, what a great underrated player he is, to now, boy, this is a bad Hall of Famer. Like, he's, you know, and I feel like he doesn't deserve that. I feel bad for him. But the thing is, Jeff, like, 16 people, as opposed to how many voters? When it's more than 500, right, of the BBWAA?
Yeah, the BBWAA is about 450, and then
okay.
You go to an era committee of 16. But you know, those committees were formed to look at managers, umpires, and executives, and players whom the BBWAA or a committee that they put together feels may have slipped through the cracks. So the ballot. Let's not forget that the ballot is put together by 10 former BBWAA members. So it's that electorate that constructs the ballots. And look, when you get to a smaller electorate, anything can happen. But I honestly believe and feel comfortable that the process works well. And still, with 75% of the vote needed, only those who deserve election earn it.
So it doesn't necessarily matter if like Harold, I think, was under 5% for in the last several years that he was on the ballot, it doesn't correlate necessarily to you once he gets to the committee.
I don't think so. And I mean, if you really look at those ballots that Harold was on, he was the 11th guy in the 10 in front of them. I think almost all of them, if not all of them, eventually earned election to Cooperstown. So
that's a great point.
It's still, and the other point to keep in mind is you're still looking at only 1% of those that have played in the majors have a plaque in Cooperstown. Very difficult to get in. And with a guy like Harold, maybe his case was a little more complicated to look at. But I'm very comfortable with his election and Lee Smith's.
Jeff Idelson, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. Jeff, you and the board of directors of the Baseball Hall of Fame have been very careful about not overmanaging what you want when baseball writers elect. As a matter of fact, you don't tell them anything as far as direction other than the general rules of integrity and the general rules about having played the game long enough and with integrity, both on and off the field. But from the perception of the steroids era guys who are starting to make their way up the ladder and to induction, how difficult has that been for you and the board of directors to stay away from that subject and not give information about how the hall looks at that era?
Well, look, we feel that voting, that the writers who handle the voting should have the independence to vote their conscience. And our rules for election, as you stated, Bruce, so eloquently, are pretty simple. They just ask voters to consider the entirety of a player's career or any candidate, as well as the character, integrity, and sportsmanship that they brought to the table. And every voter looks at that differently. At the end of the day, I think we all believe in Cooperstown that steroids doesn't create an even playing field. It unevens it, and that the voters have a difficult task of determining who they think belongs in Cooperstown. But we're comfortable with the process. We're comfortable with the leeway we give the voters, and the results have been great and continue to do well.
It is a wonderful museum. It is still one of the great memories of my life, going with my father at age 19, I believe, and we came and went, I think, four times in each of the 2 days and stayed up there. I have not been in a long time. Is the steroids era addressed at all within the museum? And if not, has it been discussed to do so?
Well, Matt, any museum worth its salt will be rich in education and provide facts and remain relevant. And yes, the answer is that we do talk about baseball's thorny issues. That's what our job is as an independent not-for-profit museum, is to basically portray baseball history and let visitors develop their own value judgments about how they feel about topics and players. So, yeah, we take on steroids head on. We take on labor dispute, the Black Sox, really those topics that are part of baseball history that you have to talk about. We do.
Has there ever been a thought about including some of that context on a specific member's plaque if someone were to get in who had a definitive steroids history?
You know, it's hard to really predict what might go on, Matt, in the future. And I think at the end of the day, when you look back at the plaques of all the 300 that are in the Hall of Fame, you have about 80 or 85 words to describe how a guy got there and what earned him election to Cooperstown. I don't know that discussing steroids is something that would earn someone election to Cooperstown. You'd put on a plaque, but that's something, fortunately, we haven't had to deal with. And it's something that's speculative, so it's really hard to say.
All right, Jeff. So we're hoping that Harold and Lee go in with Sox and Cub hats. What goes into that determination? Tell us a little bit about the weekend. You're going to have a huge contingency of Chicago people headed your way. Tell us about some of the accommodations as well as the possibilities of both having Chicago hats on.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we do is we talk to players when they get in about what we're comfortable with. And obviously, both Harold and Lee spent a lot of time on the north and south sides of Chicago. And, you know, I feel confident that the two Chicago teams will be represented. I'm pretty confident that's what those players would like. And that's something you really just don't want to have an embarrassing situation where, you know, a guy maybe played one season somewhere and it's not emblematic of where he really made his greatest impact. So it's the player's decision at the end of the day. We got one more election coming up in a couple of weeks on the 22nd. We announce the BBWAA ballot, and then you'll have the Hall of Fame class of 2019. It's an incredible weekend. It's the weekend of July 19, 2021 this year. We're a week earlier to stay away from trade deadline. You have a great awards presentation on Saturday afternoon where we honor Jason Stark will be honored with a writing award. Al Halford was going to win the broadcasting award posthumously. We'll have some other fun entertainment on Saturday to recognize the cultural side of the game. And then on the Sunday of induction weekend is when the new inductees are take their place among those already in. And we expect some 50 to 55 Hall of Famers to return to welcome the class of 2019.
I can tell you, having been there six times, that Jeff and his staff are so accommodating. And it's such a difficult weekend because there's a small town of how many people in Cooperstown, Jeff?
Town of 1,800. My high school is bigger than the town.
1,800. That expands to what, 20, 30,000 at some point?
Well, I'll tell you, four of the last five inductions have been 40,000 plus, and it'll be the same this year.
It's not easy to be accommodating, Matt, because there's no room. You know, you better use the trolleys. That's all I have to tell people. Use the trolleys if you're moving up and back because the traffic can be rough. But it is a great, great weekend, and I encourage people to go any time of the year because Jeff and his staff do a fabulous job of making you feel at home the first time you go there. Thanks so much for taking some time out, Jeff. Look forward to seeing you for induction weekend, and hopefully Smitty and Harold are going to enjoy that process.
Well, thanks so much for your very kind words, Bruce, and to you and Matt. There's always room at the inn, as there is from everybody who wants to come from Chicago to see their heroes inducted.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Jeff Idelson,
all right, guys.
President of Baseball's Hall of Fame, longtime worker for the New York Yankees, been in that media relations office, moved down there, and he's been there. He's been at the Hall for, I have to say, 15, 17 years, maybe longer now. It's does such a great job. And
actually, 24 years. He joined the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1994 as director of PR. That's coming right off the Yankees. And what's interesting is before that, he worked for the Red Sox. So he worked for both of them. But, you know, it's you've got passionate baseball fans, and I appreciate his willingness to talk about some of those thorny issues that get very difficult for the Hall itself to have to answer for.
Will Manny Machado be a member of the Chicago White Sox this week? More that we'll talk about on the Score all week long. Matt, we have people to thank. We thank Kyle Hendricks of the Chicago Cubs for joining us on the show. Tyler Kepner of the New York Times as well. And, of course, Jeff Idelson just now. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Our website, I write Cubs and Sox during the week at MLB, at 670thescore.com. I will see you next week. You and Rosie have a good time.
Thank you, sir. If you want to find the podcast, simply Google Inside the Clubhouse podcast, and you will find it via the Score's website and the radio.com podcast trove. thank you to Zach Withers, who does a great job producing every week. That's right. Steve Rosenblum is next with me, Matt Spiegel. He's Bruce Levine. Next week, we are live from the Cubs convention right here on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.